You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
What is up, Van Flippers, Lamb Goaters, Van Goaters, Lamb Flippers, whatever you are, welcome back to the show. I hope the middle of December has been treating you very well. I hope the holidays, either you're celebrating the holidays or you're about to celebrate the holidays, but I hope those go well for you. I hope you end 2020 on a high note instead of a low note, like maybe most of the year has been. I know music's not been around, live shows haven't been going on, but hey, you know what? We're definitely going to get there one day. Who knows how? Who knows when? But I believe. Thank you for supporting the podcast, everybody. If you listen to us, if you share us, if you spread us around like a virus on social media, I don't know if virus was maybe the proper word to use in 2020, but hey, I'll take it. Why don't you go ahead and let a friend know that, you know, this is the best podcast that you've ever heard. I know we're the number one metal hardcore podcast that doesn't, you know, give no shits, take no guffs. You know, we don't make the rules. We just play by them. Visit lambgoat.com for the most up-to-date news around the hardcore and metal world. Make sure you like Lambgoat on Facebook, and you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Lambgoat. Head over to the Lambgoat YouTube page and subscribe. Mash that like button, smash that subscribe button, you know, whatever the kids are saying these days. You can check out all of these episodes in video format, plus other Lambgoat content on our YouTube channel. You can tweet the podcast directly at Van Flip Podcast. Let me know what you think of the show or who my next guest should be. If you want to follow me directly on social media, you can do so. My name is Lurk, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Lurk City. And if you're just too lazy, all of these links and our guests' social media links and contact links and all that are going to be in the show notes. So make sure you go ahead and check that out. Also, while you're down there, give us a rating and a review. All right, enough yapping. Let's get to trapping. This week's guest, we have guitarist from Periphery, Mark Holtz.
Oh yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh yeah, this is Oh no, come here. Oh no, no, no! Lamb Goat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
What is up? Back on the pod. This week we got Mark Holcomb. And again, I'm joined by Alex, old webmaster of the old.com. Thank you for sharing your time with us. And Mark, welcome to the show, big guy. How are you doing? Big guy.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. It's nice to be on here. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
All right. You know, 2020 vibes.
2020 vibes. Yeah. I feel you, man. Sitting here wearing sweatpants. Well, technically not sweatpants. Shorts for once. I typically wear sweatpants around the house. I feel like I've worn sweatpants every damn calendar day this year. You know,
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So you're in the DC area, I assume?
No, I actually live in Austin, Texas. Somewhere?
Oh shit. See, yeah. All my seven interns didn't do pre-show research appropriately, so I apologize.
Well, fire them all, man.
That's much better weather than D.C.
Yeah, man. I've been here for 5 years, and it's funny you mentioned that because that's one of the primary reasons I moved here. And, you know, I have family here. I have in-laws. And, you know, we're at the point where, like, in 2015, we're like, well, we can all kind of, like, make a life work remotely, you know what I mean, apart from one another in the
sure.
band. So, yeah, I moved here in 2015, and I couldn't be happier. Like, Austin's a great place to be if you guys have ever been here before.
I have been
there.
I have been there.
Sorry.
It is a fun place, and it's good to know that you guys are so mega popular and rich that you guys can just, you know, live anywhere and still be in a band.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it has less to do with how successful we are and how, you know, how financially well-off Periphery is than have it being to do with just the nature of how we see each other. Because, like, we only ever saw each other, even in D.C. Like, I'd see the guys for writing, and I'd see them right before a tour for rehearsal, you know? And as long as we do that, as long as we're willing to, you know, fly out and get together for writing sessions and fly out and get together for rehearsal, then life is actually pretty much the same. In fact, I miss the guys even more. So my friendships, I feel like, with everybody else in the band have become fortified since we all moved apart. It's funny, as you know, the absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yeah. Most cliches are true for a reason.
Right. Yeah. I think there's something to that. Where do you guys live?
I live in, let's say about an hour north of Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania. Yeah.
I am in Florida.
And David is, go ahead, Dave, sorry.
I am in Jacksonville, and I am wearing a t-shirt. Well, you're also wearing a t-shirt as well, Mark, but
yeah,
I can wear
it. It's snowing here. Yeah. It's snowing here, and we're supposed to get like a foot before the night is through, which sucks. Ooh,
tundra, man.
Yeah, I want to move south, and I just might do that at some point. Is there anybody in Periphery that's still in D.C.?
Matt, our drummer, has lived in Baltimore his whole life, and he's not going anywhere. You know, like he's firmly planted. But no, everybody's since dispersed. Like, you know, everybody lives everywhere. We got members in California, Nevada, Baltimore. Like I said, our bass player Nolly, I mean, before he left the band in 2016, he lived in England the entire duration of his tenure in Periphery. So, you know, we've made it work, man. I think we have the whole, you know, living, working remotely thing down.
Yeah, it sounds like it. When was the last time you guys were actually together as a band in the same room?
Oof, on tour, you know, back earlier this year. So, I mean, I've worked with Misha in the past couple months. He and I are actually recording a new Haunted Shores record. It's like, right. It's like this sort of thrash, you know, black death metal prog project that we have.
Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but I remember that band. That predated your time in Periphery. Part of my ignorance, but when was the last time Haunted Shores released a record?
Let's see, we put out an EP. It was like a 6-song EP, like a 28-minute record called Viscera. I think we put it out in 2016.
Okay.
And the excuse for not going back to that, because it's always been like, we call Periphery a passion project because we like to go to it to have fun. We like to sort of seek all of our kicks in Periphery, but Haunted Shores is even more of that. It's like, we can make this ultra fast, technical, brutal music with no vocals on it, and just have it be just like, you know, tech death worship, you know, and have fun. And we've always been yearning for that, you know, the past 4 or 5 years, but Periphery schedule has been too crazy. So right now has been a great excuse. Like that's kind of all I've been doing the past handful of months here, has been writing for that, writing for Periphery. So yeah, I saw Misha about a month and a half ago, and he and I were working pretty hard on that. But other than that, I mean, we're collaborating on things remotely, sort of seeing how that goes. So 2021 hopefully will be a more active year for us and hell, the entire music industry.
Yeah. Now, how does you know, something like this, the inability to tour, how does that impact Periphery financially, say, compared to, I don't know, other bands of your size? More, less so, the same? I know obviously you guys have your own label thing going on, so perhaps that affords you a little bit more insulation from, you know, the requirements of touring, but I imagine this has been a big pain in the ass.
It has. Thankfully, it hasn't been a backbreaker, which is kind of what I dread on behalf of a lot of other bands and artists out there. You know, artists that I love. Fortunately, I'm in a position, and we're in a position where this is not going to destroy us, it's not going to break us. In fact, it kind of affords us time to pursue other things and, you know, have that next record ready to go, which we're already writing for. And, you know, to answer your question a little bit more directly, I don't think it's affected us as much as some of the other bands out there, mainly because sort of around 2014, 2015, we kind of had this change in the way we operate. Because if you look at us historically, I'd say anywhere from 2009 to 2014, we would be on tour a lot. You know, we would tour anywhere from 4 to 7, maybe 8 or 9 months a year, some years. And that took its toll on us as a band. You know, we went through a lot of growing pains around 2013, 2014. And I think we learned that for us to love what we do and to make it sustainable, more importantly, like we know we have fun jobs, right? But we don't want to burn ourselves out to where we don't even want to do these jobs anymore. So we want to make sure that they stay sustainable. And there was no way I could have sustained, you know, into my mid 30s and late 40s and eventually, or sorry, late 30s and eventually my 40s, a touring lifestyle where I was on the road, you know, 6 to 8 months out of the year. And the rest of the guys felt the same way. So we wanted to start our own record label. We wanted to sort of, you know, keep Periphery the focus, but also fortify these other ways to stay financially afloat. You know, like the companies were starting having signature instruments, being able to go to clinics.
Sorry.
It's okay. Hi there.
Some people don't respect my basement here.
It's something that we've had in mind for a long time to be less reliant on touring and sort of have the freedom to pursue these other avenues in our respective careers so that, you know, we don't have to spend so much time touring. Also, nobody could have foreseen a pandemic coming, you know, and in this way, I think we were a little bit more prepared because nobody expected us to tour right now anyways. You know, nobody expects to see us out there every other month in your town. So, so for us, it's definitely been a pain in the ass, but I think thankfully we're well equipped for it, you know?
Yeah, that certainly sounds like, and that makes sense. I remember when you guys, went the route of self-releasing, records, starting your own label. There was much publicized, argument, but just discussion, you know, with Ash of Sumerian Records, and, you know, he seemed to think it was a bad move. Obviously, it's in his best interest to not have you guys leave Sumerian. So, whether or not that's an honest opinion coming from him, who knows? But that aside, well, not that aside, but Ash aside, in hindsight now, how do you view that decision? I realize I'm not asking you to necessarily admit it was a bad idea or a great idea, just some reflection, 4 years out, 5 years out.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, that's one of the reasons we loved working with Ash is, you know, because he always shot straight and he always spoke his mind to us, even if he knew it would rub us the wrong way or if we wouldn't agree with it, he would always deliver what he thought very directly to us. And I remember that. And I wasn't shocked at that, nor was anybody in our camp oh, I can't believe that, that's his opinion. And there were a lot of other people who probably thought we were foolish too. And we respect those opinions. For us, I think it just boils down to this obsession that dates back years really to having our own autonomy, you know, to having control over it, and not to say that us being signed to Sumerian or whatever other record label had we signed somewhere else, you know, that would have been a hindrance or would have colored our music in some way, which I don't think would have been the case. We just like having control of everything down to the bone. And you know, to answer your question, I don't regret, founding our own record label. If anything, it's sort of reinvigorated my love for doing this and reinvigorate my love for finding new bands, you know, because we've been releasing, you know, for instance, we put out P4 on it. We put out our last record. We've been putting out all of our side projects. The next Haunted Shores record that's, you know, approaching its finish here, that'll be out on the record label. We put out a release from this band called Infinity Shred last year. And, you know, we have some other things in the pipeline that have nothing to do with Periphery or any of our sort of satellite projects. So, that's been a big difference in my life personally, just getting excited about discovering new music again. So I'm very content with it. And I think it's one of the best decisions we've ever made as a band. You know, it's something that we had daydreamed about for a long time and it became a reality and we had to take the plunge, you know?
Yeah. Not to get you, to kind of dish on anybody at your old, label in Sumerian, but you said that you liked having control of everything. Were you getting some kind of not pushback, but just kind of like someone in your ear over there about like how you may, I don't want to say like write songs, but how you handle releases or maybe like how albums are, you know, handled? Is that why that play into the whole thing about taking the reins in your own hands?
Well, you never, I mean, okay, so no matter what situation you're in, whether you're working with management or record label, you're always going to get some kind of two cents, you know? Thankfully, and this is why I look back on the experience with Sumerian as a plus and something that, that we learn from, but also something I'm like, you know, like I wish them no ill will, because they always let us have our cake and eat it too. Let us do our thing. They didn't really pitch in with any kind of creative feedback ever. I know they've done that with some other bands on their roster over the years, but with us, they kind of understood, and this is why we liked them, that we are stubborn individuals. And instead of battling us and everything, they kind of let us do our thing and then would chime in when they felt strongly about something. Ash would. But like I said, you know, he's always earned our respect in that way. So I wouldn't say that they even applied this like sort of pressure to us where we felt like we had to rattle free. It was just, I feel like it was just this evolutionary move that, you know, when we took a look down the line, 10, 15, 20 years later, like, I want to be doing this and I want to have a record label and I want to have bands on it and a million side projects. It's like, this is the beginning, I feel like, of a big step that we wanted to take that could have either, you know, failed horribly or got off to a promising start. And, you know, we're only one Periphery record in to self-releasing. You know, Periphery 4 was our only self-released album up to this point. We're releasing all of our back catalog now since we own the masters on the record label. And it's been positive. Like, I have no complaints. It's more work, but we're down for the work. We have a great team in place running the label. And I think we all just embrace the change, you know?
Are you guys, how, I'm sorry, are you guys not, how hands-on are you all at the label? You said you had a team, so I just didn't know if you had like, if you're just like the big wigs of the label and everyone kind of reports to you and make, like, you guys make final decisions, or are you guys like hands-on with like finding new music per se?
Oh, hands-on, or it's as hands-on as it gets. Like, I mean, we have conference calls every week where we knock out Periphery business and 3Dot business. So yeah, I mean, I can tell you at least every couple calls we're bringing up, you know, new bands, or, I mean, I know for a fact every call there's progress on some side project that we're working on that's planned for the label. So it's as hands-on as it gets, you know. We're all very involved in it and extremely passionate about it.
Cool. Now, how robust is the infrastructure of your label, 3Dot? What I'm asking is, I know you've been releasing some side projects and smaller projects, but let's say one of your peers, not more successful than you, but a, you know, band of some reputation, not Metallica, but let's say. Let's say Between the Buried and Me came to you guys and said, hey, we want to release our next record with your label. Is that something you guys could, are you equipped to handle, or you would just have to politely refuse?
Oh, no. Yeah, we're very equipped for it. You know, that.
I mean, I know you could handle Periphery, obviously. You could handle that if it was your sole focus, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Can you have multiple, you know, simultaneous sizable projects?
Yes, okay. Without a doubt. That's something that we've been building up, you know, since we sort of conceived the record label, is to be able to handle small bands. And, you know, we have, we released a record by that band Infinity Shred, like I was saying, and, you know, they're a smaller band. They're fucking awesome. And, you know, taking on a band of that size is one thing, but, you know, a bigger band like, Metallica, no, just kidding. like, you know, one of our peers, like you said, that could definitely be possible. And yeah, we're very well equipped to do that. So it's a small team that we run. I mean, we get assistance from our management team over at Fly South, group, but yeah, we're very, very well equipped for it.
Send your demos to Mark.
That's like
at
a five person. Sorry, David. I just was asking Mark, is that, you guys are all equal partners in the label?
Yep. Okay. Yep. Yes, sir.
A lot of people to make a lot of, is it a voting system on decisions or how did it, cause there's like five of you, right? So is it majority rule?
It kind of just depends, man. Like, it depends on what it is. It almost functions exactly like the band, you know, for, for really big sort of landmark decisions, things are going to need to be unanimous. You know, like we chain.
I thought Misha could just call all the shots.
Yeah. No, we just, yeah. We just Instagram DM each other, and that's how decisions are made. No. I mean, when it comes to, like, you know, a guitar part on a record, you know, if three people like it and the two are iffy on it, it's whatever. But when it comes to big sort of landmark things like signing a band, like what to name our record, you know, who to fire, like things like that, like really sort of like earth shaking decisions, things need to be unanimous. And thankfully, I think we all have an understanding, as I think, you know, in most workplaces, they seem to have that down. The kinds of decisions that need to be unanimous, you know, versus majority.
So Misha doesn't have any sort of founder veto.
No, thankfully. I mean, the way Periphery has always worked is like this. And this is one of the reasons, like, back in, I joined in 2010, I think.
Wikipedia says 2011, but I'll trust you.
Okay, no, I'm horrible with years. Okay.
Okay. I trust Wikipedia then.
Trust in Wikipedia.
You were on every, were you on the first release with Sumerian, or did you come in on number two?
I the first record I wrote and recorded on was Periphery 2.
Okay.
I did the P1 touring cycle, but I was not on the actual record. One of the draws for me getting into the band in the early days was that it was a democracy. You know, I knew Misha was the founder and I was good friends with him. But when I sort of found out the dynamic of the band was that, you know, at this point in time, whenever it was, 2009, 2010, 2011, the first record consists mainly of demos and ideas that Misha had conceived over a handful of years. But the band was looking to go into this more democratic direction where the whole band would be writing songs. There wouldn't be a sort of monopoly on the shares from the band. You know, it would be owned by everybody. You know, 1/5 per member, 1/6 per member when we had a bass player. So, you know, I wanted to be part of a band, and, you know, we've always functioned like that from top to bottom, you know, albeit, you know, Jake and Misha have been around the longest in the band. I think Misha started the project Periphery in like 2006 or something like that. And then Jake joined up in 2007 or 2008. Again, I could be fucking up the years, but
sounds about right.
Sounds about right. Go Wikipedia. Well,
that's pretty cool. And I mean, the democratic process, I honestly, I just assumed like Misha ran the show and you guys had to defer to him. Not that he wouldn't, you know, solicit and accept advice. Just, I don't know. The impression I got as an outsider was, you know, the buck would stop with him.
Well, his sort of role in the band is extremely vital, because he's always been the absolute best in our group at arranging and recording and engineering. So to have him sort of head up the writing processes, to be manning the computer while we write, and have him sort of be in charge of arrangement and just a lion's share of recording when we're demoing, when we're writing records. I mean, he takes on so much, and, you know, he wears a lot of hats in that regard. He's sort of the leader in that respect. But down to a business standpoint and down to decision making and all that, we're very, very much democratic.
I thought you were going to say he's the best guitar player in the band, and that would be who is the best guitarist? In,
yeah, that was my which next begs question. Question
who is the best? That would, of course, be me. No, I
that's
think we
fair.
All have our- No, I think we all have our strengths. I think Misha is the best at coming up with just these wacky riffs and lead lines and riffs and songs, man. Like he's an alien, you know, he's one of a kind. Jake has this really clean sort of like textbook technique on guitar, and I'm just a hack.
Cool.
I'm a hack.
Is that a joke or you're really?
No, I mean, I feel like I've grown leaps and bounds from just being around those guys. I don't know. I just do my own thing. I don't like to self critique. I don't know. Like, I have my strengths and I'm definitely aware of that. But I'm more of like a riff writer. Like, I'm not the craziest lead player in the world, but I pride myself a lot on writing riffs and songs. And And yeah, again, that was one of the perks of joining the band back in the day was, you know, if you join up, you can contribute songwriting ideas. Like you come to the table and we want you to be in the shit, like in the songwriting process. And, yeah, I mean, when I joined, they asked if they could use, Scarlet, you know, which is a Haunted Shores song, and have it be out on Periphery too. So that's just an example of what I was offered in the very beginning. And yeah, I walked into a really good situation, to be honest, you know.
That certainly sounds that way. Speaking of guitarists, you know, you've toured a lot. You've played with a ton of different people. Any guitarists in the scene over the years that sort of astounded you, were surprisingly good? Anybody come to mind?
I mean, there were always guys like our first big sort of non-club tour, like when we've gotten to the like the sort of higher upper echelon of touring was Dream Theater. So, but we knew that John Petrucci was, you know, a freaking wizard, you know, and we were all just kind of fanboying because we got to watch a band that had inspired us since we were children, you know? But we've run into bands over the years that always blow us away, just kind of out of nowhere. Like I was thinking about this guy, because he and I collaborated on something recently, but we toured with Revocation one time in 2012 on the Summer Slaughter tour that Sumerian put together. And Revocation was on the bill, and I knew they were a thrash band. And I hear Dave Davidson warming up backstage one day, and he's not playing thrash. He's not playing Marty Friedman licks. You know, he's playing jazz, like as good as a jazz, like better than a typical jazz guitar player. You know, he sounds like he just walked straight out of freaking Berkeley. And he's one That's of those awesome. Guys. Yeah. He's one of these guys. He's like, you know, head to toe tattoo, just looks like a threat. He looks like he just got kicked out of Testament or something, you know, except he plays jazz as well as anybody I've ever heard. And, you run into things like that. There's some other bands. Like we toured with the Pliny guys last year, and, like obviously Pliny's you know, a virtuoso, but just getting to hear these guys do their thing in person is inspiring, man. Half depressing, half inspiring.
Yeah, I think some of that depressing that would ring true for me. I mean, I dabble in guitar. I'm no Mark Holcomb or anybody, but as far as you know, jazz, I've always, you know, had a higher level of respect for jazz players, because when I've tried to mess with jazz, it just, like, it's out of my depth, at least as a player now that I just haven't had the right teachers. But if you can play jazz, I feel like you can play pretty much anything.
Yeah, I don't understand,
not so much vice versa.
Yeah, it's alien music to me.
Yeah, same. I listen to it, but yeah, I can't. I hear the chord progressions, and yeah,
I hear you have to smoke reefer for it. So,
yeah. Well, maybe. That's one thing. That's one thing that I haven't done in a long time. I haven't smoked any weed in a year and a half.
Well, you're not writing a record, Mark. You don't need to. You know what I mean? You don't need to get jazzy with it until then. So, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd always be when I haven't smoked in years, but when I did, my fear would be that, you know, it just sounds better than it is. And you have this false sense of enthrallment, you know, wow, that's awesome. And well, then, you know, 2 weeks later when you listen back and you're stone cold sober, it's just like, I don't get it. It sounds like shit.
It's funny you mention that, because, you know, 2020, for what it's been, which is a shit show for everybody on the face of the planet, it's been the most creative year of my life, partly because of the pandemic, because, you know, I have, you know, immunocompromised people in my family. So I'm not going out, you know, trying to eat at restaurants and things like that. Like I order my groceries and things like that, you know, like I don't even go to the grocery store. Yeah. So I've had no choice but to sort of, you know, stay indoors and work on my craft and be creative. But it's also like, I've been sober now. Like I haven't drank in over a year, like 14 months now. And
that's like no drink whatsoever, or just I haven't gotten inebriated in a year?
No, nothing. Nothing. It's just a decision I made last year. And I gotta say, it's completely changed the way I look at writing music. You know, being sober and sort of looking at things head on, and yeah, not using it as a pick me up, or not using it as a way to get inspired. You know, just sort of going into it completely lucid has been. I don't know. I find that it's worked wonders for my creativity, and I know that a lot of people out there, it's like
vice versa. You know, so, yeah.
Sorry.
Like it's vice I think versa. Like people, sorry. People need to.
I'm just waiting for the next down to be straight edge hardcore. Then is what I'm hearing. The next Periphery is going to be straight edge hardcore.
Yeah it's gonna. Yeah.
That, I wish you guys would just do that, just to see your fans' heads explode. But okay. Yeah. Probably not a good financial move. Sorry. Keep going.
Yeah, you heard it here, folks. Periphery 5, straight edge hardcore.
I just posted the headline on Lamb Goat.
Yeah, it's gonna be. 22-minute long record with 19 songs.
But yeah, so it's completely changed your you know, your writing process.
Yeah, totally. Like I've just been writing a ton, and I've been looking at creativity as sort of this way to just to sort of simulate like a 9-to-5, you know, like I'll get up and I'll drink a shit ton of coffee and I'll just get to work and start writing and start recording. And that's my day typically. I mean, having this, you know, the sober aspect of it is like, I don't come back to it later high. I don't come back to it later drunk, or I don't need, you know, a substance to help me unlock this sort of, you know, this no fucks given kind of spirit, which I used to love, you know, like that you just shed all of the sort of, what do you call it? This over-examination of music, which I think I tend to do a lot. And I would, you know, have a drink or two or smoke a little bit or something like that and come back to things and be like, I'm not examining this anymore. This is freaking sweet. But it's learning to reach that level without having to use something as a crutch. And yeah, I think the music's turning out differently. The music's actually crazier. It's all over the place. So go figure, you know?
Now, is that going to be the sobriety, is that going to be a challenge when you're back out on the road? Is that something you would utilize, sort of calm your nerves, playing before big crowds, that kind of thing?
I don't envision it being that way. I, you know, to be fair, I haven't been out on the road since I started that. So yeah, we'll see.
I don't know what the Periphery rider is backstage. I mean, maybe it's just 18 bottles of whiskey and it will be impossible for you to, be a teetotaler, but sounds like you're pretty solid in your conviction there.
Yeah. And that's what it's all about. Like I know plenty of people who tour sober, and that's really what it comes down to, is like you have access to whatever you want. You know what I mean? If X or Y is your vice, I mean, you have it, you know? It really just does boil down to how strong one's conviction is.
Well, I will, yeah. I'll let you know right now, Mark, I also gave, I mean, I commend you on your sobriety, obviously, but I also myself, gave up drinking for a year, and I'll tell you right now, it ain't gonna be fun if you decide to start drinking again, that's for sure. Cause I'm sure you had a certain pace that you were used to, you know, and all that other stuff, and all that will come back to you right away when you want to start drinking, and it'll really get you down in a bad spot. You'll get, drunk way quicker, obviously, cause your tolerance will be down, but the hangovers are so much worse now.
And I, you know, how old are you, by the way?
I'm 37, and I gave it up a couple years ago for about a year, 13 months or so. And then I've kind of dabbled in it between here and there, but it's nothing like I'll go months without drinking. So it's one of those things where like, it's kind of killed the taste for it. And, you know, I can't really enjoy the taste of beer as much as I used to or whatnot, but also, I don't know, you start realizing, like I'm sure you have in the past 14 months, that, like you said, you don't need it to maybe calm your nerves or this or the other. And, you know, I've had to deal with certain awkward situations, whether they be like, anxiety ridden or just kind of like speaking in front of crowds or going in front of crowds. And when you have to do that stuff kind of sober, it's just kind of like, whatever, you know, you just, it would be easier maybe to step out on stage, but you're going to step out on the stage regardless, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're saying. I grew up a very nervous, anxious kid, you know, like that's why I liked it when I was like a 16, 17 year old, you know, is that it helped me break out of that, helped relieve a lot of my social anxiety, performance anxiety too, like when it came to performing music. But yeah, for me, the fun part has been learning how to take on these things. And I say fun, but I'm just trying to convince myself that it's fun, you know? it's been enlightening, I should say, to learn how to do these things head on, you know, to learn how to do them like an adult, you know, without having to rely on something to get you through a certain emotion or through a certain whatever mechanism in life. And I'll be 40 in 2 years, you know, I'm 38 now. So I don't imagine like, you know, if I ever do pick it back up, that it'll get any easier to process, you know, those kinds of things like being hungover or whatnot, which is why, you know, I have no plans to go back. Like I'm really liking the sleep that I get.
Yeah.
The way I'm able to sort of cope with something shitty happening. Like that's a real thing too.
Yeah.
It's like after a bad day, or after something, you know, less than ideal happens, it's like I feel like we're trained almost societally to be like, fuck, man, I need a glass of wine. All right, God, I need a beer, you know?
Sure.
Or like even if your freaking football team loses, yes. Or they win, you know? Or like you're just like, oh, I'm going to go celebrate.
We're trained to numb rather than confront adversity. And being forced to confront it, I think, is a positive thing, albeit, you know, it can be painful.
Definitely painful. But I feel like learning these things, it's like strengthening this muscle. Like you get better at coping with those things. And then the next thing that comes, who knows what it is, you're able to face it with a little bit more awareness and strength, you know, and not sort of hide from it.
Do you have any vices now? Do you, are you a coffee guy?
He drinks a lot of
chronic
coffee.
Masturbating.
Smoker. that's more healthful, I think, than alcohol.
Do you switch from left hand to right hand, or do you just kind of always use your shredding hand? You know what?
There's this trick called the Stranger.
I'm familiar.
I've heard that one.
I play a lot of video games. Like that's always a vice. But again, it's just like everybody plays video games, man. Like I'm not sitting there, like, you know, just ordering 9 pizzas a day and you know, and gaming 24/7. But, you know, I get over invested in video games. I watch a lot of freaking Netflix because it's quarantine 2020. But, you know, everybody has their vice. Everybody has their issues, but mine thankfully are not, you know, revolving around substances anymore. So thankful for that.
Serial killing?
Serial killing maybe?
He wouldn't admit it right now.
Well, I wouldn't advise you to admit it. You are a serial killer, but DM me later and tell me all about it because that sounds cool.
Yeah, because that'd be a juicy break on Lambo, you know?
We've had some of those. We've had some.
Please be a serial killer and please give me an exclusive. Thank you.
So, what was your choice of drink when you were partying and everything like that? Were you a beer guy? Were you a liquor guy? Or. You know.
I was wine. I really liked wine. But now, man, like it's funny because like the to imagine the taste of wine almost grosses me out. I don't know what it is, but like,
I think it's because it is gross. You just got used to it.
Maybe, or like the way it made me feel. The one thing that like I did, I was telling my wife is like I like the sort of refreshingness of a beer, and I drink non-alcoholic beer, I like kombucha, and it has that fizzy quality too. But nothing about the inebriation I miss. But yeah, if I had to say one thing, I would say that I miss that like a freaking cold beer on a hot day. But again, it's all kind of remedied by the fact that they make beer with no alcohol in it, which I was just telling someone the other day. It's like I could drink like freaking 9 of these and I wouldn't feel anything. I get to have the things that I like, but not have the things that I don't like, you know, which is being fucked up. So
it's a win-win.
Yeah.
It's probably, are those less expensive or more expensive than?
I think they're the same price, man. Like, I think they're the same price, which is weird. You'd think they would be like a dollar for a six pack, you know, because it doesn't have the stuff that people are after.
Yeah, I guess. They should definitely. The proper synthesis of chemicals is expensive or something. I don't know.
Well, there are not as many chemicals going into near beer as there would be beer. There, you know, alcohol is definitely not in there. So I would assume it's everything but alcohol.
Yeah.
So there's got
to
be cheaper.
Something to simulate the. Well, I'm so ignorant now. I remember back in the day, my father went through, you know, periods where he would try drinking non-alcoholic beer like Sharps and whatever those shitty brands were. And
O'Doul's.
Maybe, yeah. They were just bad. But I remember they had a small amount of alcohol in it, you know, a real tiny amount. I don't even know if they're still like that. I don't know what is there a mass marketed non-alcoholic beer these days, or is it all some sort of niche, you know, local thing?
There are some that have 0.0. They have none. Okay. And I like those. There are some that are like 0.5, I think. Like if you go buy O'Doul's, I think that's 0.5, and you have to drink. Like I someone told me this. I'm not sure if this is correct. If you're listening to this and you call me out on being an idiot, then fair game. But I've heard that like a ripe banana has more alcohol in it. Like when your body processes it, than a low alcohol content beer. I could be wrong about that, but like your body converts things into alcohol. God, I'm going to sound like a total idiot right now.
Do it.
So never mind. I'm not even going to go. Okay. I've heard that there are certain foods and certain things you can eat that which your body processes and turns into that, and that have a greater likelihood of getting you fucked up than like a really low alcohol content beer. I'm not sure if that's correct. So if I sound like an idiot right now, forgive
me. It's chemically impossible because the fermentation that occurs post oxidation is precluded by, actually, I have no idea what the fuck.
It's like, what is he doing? Is he taking us to school really quick? What the fuck?
I want to pretend I knew something and I know nothing. So we'll just go with what you said. Somebody will probably fact-check that.
I was like, this dude knows. Oh, no. My God.
He's using big words. That's all. He's using big words.
And, yeah. You know. And I ran out of big words really quickly.
You said oxidation. I looked at you like you had a freaking lab coat on.
Yeah. That was the only word I had in my quiver, oxidation. Then I was out. I had to bail on
it. It sounded really good with right following fermentation, because then all of a sudden you're like, oh, multiple syllable words, science, what's going on?
Yeah. No, I don't know shit. Maybe I'm going to go eat a few bananas and see what happens. I don't really like bananas.
Mark is ruining like a bunch of straight edge people's diets right now. They're going to listen to this and they're going to be like, damn, I can't eat bananas now. There's alcohol in bananas and all sorts of other shit.
Hell yeah. Take that X off your hand, banana boy.
Yeah, right?
I'm done with bananas, man. They're going in the – I don't know why they talk like that.
Every straight edger talks like that. I don't know.
Yeah, go in the bin, man. No.
Well, so what is fucking whiteboard back here? What was I going to say? Periphery. I guess you guys, you said you have a new album in the works. You know, we've asked a few other bands that we've spoken to, and it's kind of, you know, some bands are waiting so they can properly tour to support the record. Other bands obviously are just, you know, going with it. Do you guys have a prevailing opinion there? Are you going to wait till the pandemic's over before releasing a new record, or at some point it's just going to be too a long await and you guys are just going to have to fire away?
I was on the fence about that for a while. You know, like I saw bands putting out records and I was like, why? Like, why would you do that if you're not going to tour until 2022 possibly? You know, like why? And then we talked with our manager, we talked amongst ourselves in the band, then we saw more bands doing it and we'd see, you know, that they had successful launches. The records were well perceived, like Deftones put out a really killer record that I loved. And they went into that full force and people ate it up. Like, you know, it was just a really well launched album and they're not going to tour off of it for God knows how long. And the list goes on and on and on, but I think where we're at right now, like we're not even sure if it's going to be a record. We're just writing and we're going to see what happens, which is, I think, how we start all of our records. You know, like we don't know if it's going to be Juggernaut or Periphery 2 or Periphery 3 or whatever. Could be an EP, could be a single, could be whatever. I think right now we're just in the stages of gathering material and getting ideas ready, which is really exciting. But I think we're letting that dictate how our timeline unfolds. You know, we're not going to be like, well, you know, we're not putting out this record until we can tour immediately. I think the value in that is diminishing as time goes on. The more sort of nebulous this whole pandemic music industry situation plays out, you know, the more uncertain everything's going to be because of that. So, you know, we're not being held hostage by the pandemic as far as releasing music for us. You know, unfortunately, the inconvenience is just like we were talking about, living far from one another, not feeling safe to travel, to get on a plane, away from loved ones at a time like this. So yeah, I think it's more that we're letting that dictate what we do with music. But to answer your question, no, like we're not waiting for the industry to come back full force to release music. Like it'll be out when it's out, just like we've been operating for the past, you know, decade.
Not changing the operating procedure. Have you guys been, you know, look, some bands now, American bands who have started announcing European tours for fall of 2021. Is that on your radar at all?
I saw that, man. That also gives me mixed feelings, because it's like
a pipe dream, maybe.
Yeah. And I see these tours and I'm like, damn, that's an awesome bill. Like I get lost in the looks of it, you know, and I'm like, whoa, I'm jealous. Yeah. Like they're going out with them and they're going out with these guys. And I get stoked for a second.
And then you're like, is it even going to happen?
Right. And like as a concert goer myself, you know, as somebody who gets excited when bands come to Austin and play in my neighborhood, it's hard for me to get excited about that 9 months from now. You know, and I wouldn't buy tickets to be frank with you. Like I wouldn't buy tickets for a show. I could be dead in 9 months, dude. Like, I don't know. Like 9 months is a long time from now. As a band, like from the band perspective, it's like, I don't know how I feel telling our fans that, like, hey guys, get stoked about a show that's happening in a year. It's like, unless it's like some massive festival or something where it's sort of, you know, we're at the mercy of a, you know, a bigger name or something like that. But no, I mean, for us, like there's no itch, there's no sort of pressure to announce anything coming back. But I mean, I can tell you right here, right now, we have no plans to tour. We have not penciled anything in because, you know, we're just waiting to see how things play out. Sadly, it's a shitty situation to feel completely, you know, in the dark and to not have any control, but hey, everybody's in the same boat, you know, nobody's any different than one another.
Yep.
So with you guys all being apart, I'm assuming, the fans aren't going to be seeing a, live stream event anytime soon either.
We've kicked that around actually, you know, like it would just take us flying into one place, rehearsing for a handful of days or a week, hiring a production crew and doing it. You know, and we've kicked it around. We tried to make it happen, you know, in the coming months. But again, not to sound like an alarmist, it's just none of us feel like it's worth it to leave home right now. You know what I mean? And that's just the plain truth from all our perspectives. You know, I think I take everything very seriously, and the rest of the band does too. So, yeah, I'm not saying you couldn't see that, but. I know some bands have killed it. Like I saw Under Oath's thing and they fucking slayed theirs.
Today that they made like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I wouldn't have doubted it. They did multiple streams though too. So I'm interested to see how that panned out, because they did a handful of albums over the last couple of weeks or months or whatever. They're streaming that.
Albums?
Yeah, they did like they live streamed a couple albums.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I saw that. I saw that same article too. And it's not surprising when you see the amount of work they put into their production, you know, it was pretty mind blowing. So I think if we were going to do something, the emphasis would have to be on making it special, 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 special. Kind of like they did. You know, not saying we'd rip. That would be pretty funny, though, if we just ripped off their production.
Do it. Take all their artwork and shit and just cross out their name and put yours. Fuck it.
20. We finish it up and it's like 91 missed calls from Under Oath.
So what is with you guys? What's with the guys in your band liking instrumental music only? Putting out instrumental music only, because Misha also has his side project Bulb that you know is instrumental, and you have some instrumental side projects. So I would assume
because their voices suck.
I would assume the other guys in the other bands are not the bands, but the other guys in the bands probably also like instrumental music.
I mean, actually, maybe I'll say something that surprises you here. I prefer music with vocals over it. I do. It's just when it comes to at least Haunted Shores, from Haunted Shores' perspective, I think the music is the most satisfying when it's instrumental, mainly because it's so fucking busy, you know? Like, I remember the first time I heard Necrophagist, you know, or whatever, like the Faceless, what's the Planetary Duality, that record?
Like, awesome album.
Yeah, like those kinds of records that kind of shaped their genre for years to come, you know, those are landmark bands to me, and landmark, they represent points in time which I think you can see other bands trying to emulate, you know.
Sure.
And that kind of music, I always thought the vocals were cool, but you'd never listen to it for the vocals, you know. Right. And
totally
for this music, it's just so fucking, especially the stuff I'm working on now, it's just so fucking nuts instrumentally that I don't know if vocals would feel right, would sound right over it, you know? And I'm sure we could make them work. And we had Devin Townsend do vocals on a song on our last record. And that was something he did himself. Like, that was his choice. I sent him a song and then he emailed me back vocals on it. So we didn't premeditate this plan.
Wow, to ask that's Devin. That's probably quite a mind fuck right there.
It was a mind fuck. And the song worked really well because I think he just heard it, you know, like he heard his lines as he heard the music, and which is why he was able to write a song in a matter of hours and track a song in a matter of hours and email it back to me. But I think with that being the exception, the music works better instrumentally. But when it comes to like bands that I love, man, like there's really only a handful of instrumental bands that I'll go listen to on a consistent basis. Like Animals as Leaders is one.
Sure.
Plenty is one, but like those are outliers. And those are kind of the only, like, I think Polyphia is doing some really cool stuff. Intervals does some pretty cool stuff. Like there's just not a whole lot of instrumental bands that I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get stoked for that, you know, but I really like singers, you know, I do. And I know that sounds funny and ironic coming from somebody with a couple instrumental projects. But.
any guilty pleasures that are not what one might expect, like you're an uber Kelly Clarkson fan or something?
I mean, my wife, when she's around the house, she'll blast pop music, and I don't hate it. Like, she'll play like Taylor Swift and stuff like that, and I don't like that stuff gets stuck in my head.
It's meant to.
Yeah, well,
Taylor's kind of gone away from, you know, the one dimensional pop. I only know because my daughter, you know, keeps listening to her latest album. What's that?
Yeah, right. You're a big fan guy. We all know.
Fine, I am. I respect Taylor. I don't really listen.
He likes folklore. He likes folklore better than the new album. He doesn't like the new album as much. He prefers folklore.
Is that the one with the Burzum cover?
Yeah. The metal cover.
I don't even know.
It has like the freaking.
She's in the trees and shit. Yeah.
It looks like an Impaled Nazarene album cover. Yeah. You know, like with her in the woods.
You would pick it up thinking like, oh, there's going to be some black death metal on this thing.
Yeah, where's the blast beats?
Cultural appropriation. It's horrible.
It's cultural appropriation. Call her out. You should get her canceled for appropriating black metal culture.
No, I think some people. I don't think that would go over well. But I think Reddit did some. Reddit or Twitter was getting all like, you know, offended.
I don't think you can cancel Taylor Swift. There's certain people that are uncancelable.
Uncancelable?
Because they have so many fans, they would just drown out whatever critique.
It's the Michael Jackson effect, right?
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate.
Yeah, Lamb Goat has a little bit of that too. Can't be canceled.
Well, I think that's because we've already been, you know, flushed away down the toilet. So there's really no more harm can be done to the, you know, the brand.
Yeah, I mean, if we do get canceled, it's probably better for us. You know what I mean? We would get more recognition.
I think we're already canceled. I think that's what I'm getting around to saying.
Can't canceled.
We were canceled first. Yeah, we're already canceled.
We got canceled before school, man.
Yeah, something like that. I don't even want to talk about it because it's just so depressing. Sorry,
you'll be okay.
About my miserable life. Okay, so your wife plays pop, but you're not the pop.
Okay,
fan.
I mean, there's surprising stuff, but I'm not guilty about it. You know, like there's like.
You shouldn't be really.
But, yeah.
Like, that was a joke. You shouldn't have a guilty pleasure, I think.
Yeah, it was a trick question. You're trying to
Unless you're listening to Attila. That's for you, Franz. Not that you'd be watching.
He might be watching, but he was our first guest, so there's no ill will.
That's
there.
True. No.
Oh, man. That got me. Like, one of my favorite bands ever is the 1975. You guys know them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure.
I love them. There's a like an Icelandic composer named Ólafur Arnalds who's like he was like ranked my number one Spotify play this year because I'm obsessed with his music. So there's stuff like that. Like there's just yeah, and then Hammock is another one. You guys heard of Hammock?
I have not.
That one I must plead ignorance.
Do you guys like really sort of ambient, relaxing music that kind of just like it sits there like really relaxing wallpaper? You don't have to think about it or analyze it. Do you guys like music like that?
Like Brian Eno?
Yeah.
Airport music type stuff?
Yeah.
Once in a while, but that's not something I actively try to listen to. The only time I seek out that music is if I actually do want to concentrate and accomplish something without being distracted by whatever's playing.
That's perfect because, okay, I'll give you a challenge. Next time you're doing something that requires your undivided attention, whatever, like you're wrapping Christmas presents or whatever, just you're doing something else, washing dishes or freaking getting in fights on the internet with people, put on a Hammock record. Just anyone.
This is Hammock, like the kind you'd swing in?
Yeah, like banana hammock. The kind you'd swing in,
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. I'll check that out.
Yeah, those for both of you.
It sounds like it'd be in that Calm app, you know, the app that you can subscribe to and they read you stories or have calming music to go to bed with rain in the background.
I mean, yeah, there's no rain in it, but it is exactly that, except it's not. It doesn't feel so Kmart. You know, like when you open these apps and stuff, it just feels like, God, who wrote this crap?
True.
This satisfies that, except it's just. It's like lush and grandiose and it'll fucking move you, man. Like it's been a big discovery in my life.
Do you, do you listen to the Chilled Cow on YouTube?
Is that a person?
It's a YouTube account, but they live stream lo-fi hip hop beats like all day.
Hmm.
Oh, never heard of horrible.
That. Well, I didn't know. Well, it's not horrible, Alex, but, since you like that kind of music, it's, something that I'll put on in the background, like my dad used to when on the weekends and stuff like that, he would put on jazz music, like the jazz radio station for the local area here. And I attribute that to kind of like my version of me putting on jazz, which it's not the same, obviously, but it's just like a chilled lo-fi kind of background noise that's not necessarily like elevator styled music or whatever.
Yeah. I know what you're saying. It's like this middle ground. It's meant to sit in the background, but it's not Muzak, so to speak.
Muzak. Well, we're talking about Muzak, so I guess we've probably covered everything worthy of covering.
What are your big albums for the year? Since you had plenty of time to listen to albums, they necessarily don't have to be in the heavy genre, but they obviously like the people who are listening to this probably would want that. Do you have any 2020 tops for the year as far as releases? You already mentioned Ohms, so.
Yeah. The Deftones record was really good. What else came out recently? The last Plenty record that came out a couple weeks ago was amazing. I'm literally looking through my my Spotify list right here. I really like the last Bring Me the Horizon record. I know they get a lot of shit.
Interesting.
Yeah, I really like it. Just because it's like they you know, you can accuse them of wanting to be a radio band, of wanting to sell out, wanting to make more money. But to me, I hear a band that just doesn't give a fuck about what anyone thinks. You know, it's like, we're going to have a song with the Evanescence chick on it, and we're going to write a pop song, and we're going to have baby metal on a song. And we know people are going to shit all over this, but we like, that's what I hear. You know,
we do
that's
have my, to respect their independence for sure.
Yeah.
Do we though? Do we? I
don't know. You know,
I do. I don't really even listen to them, but I do appreciate the fact that they, at this point in time, clearly do not cater to anyone but themselves. No.
They've definitely gotten successful, and I don't want to take away from their success or anything like that, but it just, I don't know if I'm buying it. That's all.
That's fair. That's all fair. All right.
We better move on.
Have you guys heard of a band called Sleep Token?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not intimately familiar with Sleep Token, but.
Okay. Well, they put out a record. I don't know if it came out this year. It may have come out late last year. But that album is mind blowing. That may be my favorite thing that I've listened to this year. I come back to that consistently. It's just, the singer is masked, so they have this whole, you know, weird mystique thing going on, which is kind of easy to dismiss as a gimmick, and you can call it whatever. But it's just this really, really insanely well produced, heavy rock music. Like, it has metal moments.
But, masked, so it's like Slipknot.
More like Mushroom Head, but you know, similar.
It's emo, it's emo Mushroom Head.
that sounds really bad.
Sorry, yeah, I thought we were talking about Sleep Token. Bring Me the Horizon. Sorry.
Yeah. What else? What else have I been listening to? Zeal and Ardor. They put out an EP that I think was freaking fantastic. What else, man? There's a couple of other ones that I'll probably kick myself for not listening, but I think those are the big ones. And that Icelandic dude, Ólafur Arnalds, who put out a record last month, that's freaking fantastic. But as far as metal goes, like there's stuff that I'm really looking forward to in 2021. But I think that's it for metal.
All right, cool. Keep going, Dave.
what about releases that were not metal?
Yeah, I mean that
old you just Arnold's listed record. Some.
Yeah, whatever.
That was the big one. Yeah, 1975 put out a cool record. I don't think it was their best one. Oh, here's a one that does fall under metal. I really liked Eson's last. You know, there's no Eson from Emperor.
Yeah.
Yeah, he put out a solo.
It's totally not, you know, like Emperor, obviously. But I heard some of it. I unfortunately don't spend a lot of time with things. The older I get, like, I'll listen to a song here and there, and I never give it its due time. But I have heard good things about you know, his latest record. So I'm
it's
not surprised.
Cool. It's not Emperor, and it's so far from Emperor and so far from his other solo stuff. It's very with like subdued and restrained. And I just think that dude's a genius. There is one metal record I forgot to mention is a band called Loathe.
Yeah. From England. Yeah.
We had him on, well, the singer.
Kadeem.
Oh yeah. Is he a cool guy?
No.
No.
No, he is definitely a cool guy. Yeah.
He sucks.
He's pretty young too. If I can remember correctly, he's like 20.
11 or 12?
Yeah, he's like 20, 23 or 25, somewhere in between that ballpark. But it was cool because we had him on way earlier on in the year when the pandemic first started kicking off and everything like that. So he was one of the first remote podcasts that we did. But the album had just come out, I think, right before that. And it's been really cool to see how everyone has kind of taken to that, because I told him in the the podcast that I was like, I think this is probably going to be one of my favorites for the year, because it, I don't know, it's just like a groovy, sexy Deftones, like metalcore Deftones is what I called them. So
It's been really interesting to see everybody else kind of grab onto that. And, you know, they're going to be – they already are, but they're going to be in a lot of top 10 for the year, you know, charts or top whatever for the the year. So they're great.
Yeah, band. Dude. I agree with your with your assessment of that band and that record. Man, there are moments on that album. I would probably have to call that maybe my top record or maybe the second one behind Sleep Token. There are just some moments on that album that are like the heaviest thing I've ever heard, you know, like that. I'm like, what the fuck? Like the way it's produced and the way it's mixed and just the way it's presented. It's just like, Jesus Christ. Like, why do I play metal? Like, why? Like, why do I try? Like, if nothing is going to be heavier than this. God damn, that band is good. Yeah. Like that kind of stuff gets me excited for like, cause there's a shit ton of bands that are watering down this whole thing, man. Like, you can find a gent band, some kid in his freaking bedroom wearing sweatpants doing this, like making what they call gent music. I hate that name as a word to describe a type of music, but like, there's a whole movement out there of people who use it, quite liberally. And, and I think there are bands that like, every once in a while I hear it, I'm like, yep, this is where it belongs. Like, this is where the torch fucking belongs. And I believe that band has it all right there. So I hope we get to share the stage with those guys sometime soon, man. That band is fucking excellent.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the new metalcore crossover that's going on in the last couple of years here. And they're one of the big proponents of, they're one of the bands that do it very well. They take that, you know, older new metal sound and they make it into some kind of weird, genty metalcore, deftone, sexy lovemaking record or something. You know, it's crazy. That thing is so great.
who are other bands that are doing it? I'm just, pardon my ignorance. Are you like talking about bands like Issue? Like who are you talking about?
For like
I just want to know.
A new metal crossover band?
Like
bands
that do that, like sort of like that cool new metal melding kind of thing.
Oh, man. Burials is one of, I don't really want to call them like a new metal crossover, but Knocked Loose, I feel like Knocked Loose is a big one of that. They take a lot of older 90s kind of alternative rock, early 2000s new metal, and they do like a good hardcore metalcore mashup with it. Some people do not agree with my opinion of that.
Nah, you might take some heat for that.
Yeah, but I love it, so I'm not talking shit.
I think you just called Knocked Loose Limp Bizkit. That's what I heard.
Then, and if I did, that's the biggest compliment they could ever have gotten from me. So, you know, and I'm not shitting on either of those bands. So they're both my faves. They're a good band for that. Orthodox is another band from Tennessee. We've had them on the podcast. They're also kind of one of those good kind of crossover bands. I don't. My mind's going blank, but there's a bunch of them out there. And, you know, once you get on Spotify, it'll fucking shoot you a couple more bands that the fans also listen to this, you know, so.
Okay. Well, I that gives me a couple of new bands to explore. I hear what you're saying too, about the older you get, the less patience you have for like, you know, listening to a ton of new things and spend your whole freaking day discovering things. It's like, that's not me anymore. That was me in my early 20s, you know? Now I'm just a bitter old man who hates gent bands. So, yeah,
about it. That's about it.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. That gives me some Spotify fodder.
Stray for the Path. That's another one too. They've been around for a little bit. Stray for
the Path. Oh, they're awesome.
Yeah, but the last album they did, not this year, but last year, no one told me it was like a perfect marriage of new metal and hardcore, because that is a great record too. It's
I didn't even hear what band you said.
Straight from the Path.
Yeah, Straight from the Path.
Oh, Straight from the Path. What, just discovering them now? Where were you?
No, I'm saying that this album they just recently did, because I went and I've, you know, when I listened to it, I was like, holy crap, this is like a new metal record. It reminded me of, there's a band from Europe, Germany or Denmark or something like that. They're called Nasty. And they put a record out this year that was pretty good too. That was along the lines of the metalcore new metal vibe.
Stuff I heard was pretty cool, but I mean, Straight from the Path, they were always, every time they'd release something, it was like, this is a Rage Against the Machine ripoff. But I haven't really listened to their latest record, so I don't know.
I haven't either. I'll check it out though.
Yeah, it was last year.
Everybody's got homework assignments. I got to go listen to Hammock.
Yeah. Hammock.
Hammock.
Hammock. Hammock. Hammock. Shit. You're not here in Pennsylvania Dutch country. We say hammock.
Yeah, you're gonna be listening to a whole different. You're gonna be listening to a whole different record and be like, I'm not understanding. I'm not understanding what Mark's talking about.
Why the hell is he recommending this bluegrass band?
So where's music going? Where's music going, Mark, the label master and guitar virtuoso? Where do you foresee heavy music going as far as like the marriages of genres, you know, and everything like that?
I don't know. Like I get excited about it. Like I know a lot of people like to be defeatists and you know, it's not like it used to be. And you know, it's shit's dead. Like some of the bands that we listed, like those bands genuinely get me stoked for where things are going. And it's just cool to hear, like, you know, when you hear a band and you can tell that they really, really give a shit and they're not doing it for any other reasons than to make the exact type of music that they want to make. And maybe I'm being naive and thinking that, you know, all awesome bands are like that. But it does get me really excited. Like it does make me think to myself, it's like, damn, if people
like Maroon 5.
Yeah, like Maroon 5. Adam Levine. No. But yeah, I mean, and from a technical standpoint too, is you start to hear bands tie together elements that like I'm really picky about, like production and like a mix, and then combine them with like this insane technical ability, which you used to only hear in certain places. But now, you know, you open friggin' Instagram and you find kids playing guitar better than you could ever imagine yourself playing, you know? And I suffer from that, dude. It's like I open, you know, whatever social media platform, I'm like, holy shit, man. Like this kid's 16 years old and he's playing Circles Around Me and My Whole Family. And in a certain way you're scared because you feel threatened. I think that's my first instinct is like, oh my God, what am I? And then I take a step back and I'm like, this is pretty amazing because this is not where I was at when I was that age. This is where no one was at when I was coming up, you know? And, to see that kind of growth and to see that kind of sort of self-awareness, you know, like from people who are not established, from people who are not doing things for money, who are not doing things to pay bills, who are just doing it because they love doing it. That to me is really promising, you know?
Yeah.
So I hope
progression of the human race from a musical standpoint. If we're certainly not progressing in other areas, so we'll take the ability to play instruments as a positive.
Yeah. We'll see, man. I remember when I was growing up, like you would straight up run into bands who you knew were only in this to get girls or to make money or to be famous and whatnot. And when I see people doing the exact opposite, you know, it just lights a fire into me because they're like, this is why I want to stay in it because I want those people to be my peers. You know, I want those people to come up so we could be in the same place. And I want to all be, you know, I want to be in a circle where we are nothing but those kinds of people. And that's why we tour with who we tour with. We are very picky about the bands that we take out because we sort of have a very keen eye for that stuff. Like,
so you will not be touring with Attila.
You're full of some Attila vitriol.
I'm just picking on Attila tonight.
I don't know why they wouldn't Veil of Maya go out on tour with them.
yeah.
Well, it probably isn't a good idea to go out on tour with them if you're trying to be sober anyway. It probably wouldn't be as fun for you, you know.
Oh, we love those guys. I mean, they party hard, but like Mark is one of those guys who it's like he and I text about video games like every day. He's one of those guys who I know only cares about two things: is video games and music, and like. He doesn't give a shit about anything else. And I like that. Like that's a very
he cares
simple
about
mindset.
He cares about girls too.
Does he? Okay.
you and Mark talk about girls, David? That's interesting.
Not, no, But if you follow him on Twitter, obviously you wouldn't know. no, but he was a pretty interesting cat to have on for sure. I didn't really have any expectations of what to expect when we were talking with him, because I didn't know him at all outside of Attila. And to be honest with you, I wasn't super.
Who are we talking about?
Mark?
I thought we were talking about Mark.
Chris.
Okay, we're talking about Chris.
Yeah, Franz.
Yeah, but he was talking about Mark. All right, I lost the train.
Whatever. All right, so. Never mind. Anyway, Chris was a cool guest to have on. All right, moving on.
I wanted to clarify something. That I said that he was a man of simple taste. I didn't mean that as slander towards Mark Akubo. I meant it, and like that's how I am. Like, I only care. I'm trying to only care about a handful of things in life, and I like people like that too. Because I'm like, yeah.
Yeah,
I like these things too, man. It's like these are the things that I live and breathe, and I only want to be about those things.
Life is complicated. Focus is good.
Fuck yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, totally, man. Cutting out all that crap, and you mentioned Twitter. That's something else I had to cut out because I noticed it would just put me in a bad mood incessantly.
Yeah, incessantly. That's where I am with my life right now.
On Twitter,
especially in this political environment, Twitter,
dude, it's brutal. Can't even go. I can't go anywhere. It's
you
like,
you gotta learn. You gotta learn to just keep scrolling and not enter. Not don't let that shit into your head. And I know it's hard for people to hear that, but like, it doesn't. None of that shit bothers me on social media anymore because I just don't care. I don't care what anyone's opinion is necessarily anymore.
You're a better man than I because I can't do that. Like I can't. And some days I'm more disciplined. I don't let it rattle me. But like. You know, you just see it at the wrong time. You see somebody's stupid opinion at the wrong time. You're like, why do I need to know this person who I went to fucking high school with's opinion about the Secretary of Defense, what he said in an interview? It's like, why do I need to know that? I don't need to know that, you know? Yeah. I hear what you're saying, and I wish I could have that kind of fortitude when it comes to that kind of thing. But I figure the most direct path for me is just amputation.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fortitude. I think David's drinking again, like you said.
Like you said.
It's easier to scroll when it's all blurry and you're drunk, you know?
Yeah. He scrolls because he can't read it. Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, I think we don't want to take up your whole
I got one more.
Your whole night.
I got one more.
Do it.
What was the 2020 game of the year for you? Video game of the year, Mark? Or what did you play a lot of?
Sorry?
What was your top game, or what did you play a lot of?
It was probably a tie between The Last of Us 2 and Ghost of Tsushima for PlayStation 4. I just picked up Cyberpunk for PlayStation 4, and holy shit, it barely runs on my console.
It's pretty buggy, I heard, on PlayStation 5, so good luck with that.
Oh, man. And I'm playing on the 4, on the base PS4. So it's comical. Like I'm trying to like get through it because I know that it's a good game and I know there's like a really good story and I know it's an awesome game deep down, but man, it is tough to get through. Like with the crashes, with the bugs happening nonstop. I'm really trying, but part of me just wants to say fuck it and get a good gaming PC or wait till the PS5 comes back in stock. So yeah, those are my two. Last of Us 2 and Ghost of Tsushima.
No Among Us or whatever it is?
Among Us, you said?
Yeah, I don't know. People be playing that on the internet.
Yeah, I was
not like on cell phones and shit?
I don't know. Yeah. I've never even downloaded it, so I don't know.
I have friends who play that. I haven't given it a shot yet. Is it cool?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Again, I'm commenting on pop culture, that's all. I'm just commenting what I see in the universe.
You have the pulse of the people.
Yeah. Well, as far as games for me, I think, is that what you were asking? Like my game?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have a console anymore, and my Mac is not a gaming computer. I did play like Dota 2, which is like a League of Legends kind of thing.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But I guess my main go-to game this year has to be Pokemon Go.
Oh, you play? I play too.
Well, we'll friend each other up, guy. We'll send gifts back and forth.
Friend me, bro. I play with Mark Akubo, actually. He and I and Spencer are the singer of our band. We all play together. We do raids and shit every day.
No, I knew that you guys definitely played because I've seen the YouTube videos of you guys recording Hail Satan or another like mini docu-series that you guys did for an album. And you guys definitely took breaks to go Pokemon.
Did you just say Hail Satan?
I did.
All right. He's twisted your album title into something profoundly it's okay. evil.
Hail what? Satan, Hail Stan, Hail Santa, whatever you guys want to call
it. Oh, Hail Stan. Yeah. Are you serious? It's been Hail Stan this entire time? Oh, my God.
I thought you were joking.
I legitimately
Hail Satan?
Yeah, I legitimately thought it was Hail Satan, and I was thinking, like, all right, whatever, cool.
Dude, no, did that periphery album, Hail Satan.
I mean, I've listened to it. I have looked at it many, many times, and I guess it's just one of those things. It's like when you're a graphic designer and you see the same word over and over and over and over again, but in different fonts, it just automatically looks spelt wrong. So,
I think it means you're an innately evil person, David.
Maybe.
Sorry to be the bearer of bad news.
Satan is just twisting it to make me see it, you know, and I can just see Satan wherever I look.
When we announced that album title, so many of our fans took to social media and they were like, I'm so disappointed, guys. Like, why the Satan worship? Like, I'm so bummed out. You know, like,
yeah, I was one of them, apparently.
I was going to say, that's probably Dave.
You've lost a fan.
Betrayed me.
Oh, my God. That'll be something they'll talk about now. Good.
Yeah, you're just trying to live down Veil of Maya, and now you're on Hail Satan.
Well, I like the other band, Zowl, too. You know, that's a good band. I like Zowl.
Yeah.
I like
Zowl.
Yeah.
That's all right. I'll go sleep in my hammock.
Hammock.
Anyway. All right. Well,
before I fuck up anything else.
Shit here.
Yeah, this was awesome, guys.
No, we totally appreciate it, man. And we look forward to something from Periphery someday.
Yeah, and the Haunted Shores record too. That'll be
out. Oh yeah, I want to hear that. The way you've described it, it sounds pretty. Sounds pretty crazy. I'm down for that.
Yeah, I'm stoked for people to hear it. I'm really, really psyched for it. So
and,
yeah.
And Mark, I'll send you my Pokemon trainer code via the Snapchat, via the Skype, and we'll send some gifts back and forth.
Do it, man. Do it. And we'll get that incel life on. You know what I mean? Looking Pokemon Go all day.
Hell yeah. I just need some more remote raid passes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Buy them, dude. That's what I do. I have no shame in saying that I pay money for it.
You know, I should because I play the damn game so much that I feel like, I mean, I've been playing it for years, but I feel like I should spend money on it. But then again, part of me is like, I'm not there with the spending money on cell phone games, because to me it doesn't feel like a game. Does that make sense?
But nobody's looking. Like, nobody's ever gonna know. Just do it and then forget it happened, you know? Like, just do it real quick and then don't ever think about it again.
Did you buy $100 worth of Pokemon coins? No, I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know.
Before we get any nerdier, we should cut it. We should just cut it.
You guys like talk about yeah. Satan and pocket protectors.
They do go hand in hand, you know.
But seriously, man, appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll, I won't be playing Pokemon Go or anything. You guys can, you know, do that. But otherwise, I'll see you around in the Lamb Goat Music Periphery world. But thank you much for your time. Stay safe. And we'll see you down the road.
Yeah, Mark, have a good one, bro.
Thanks for giving me your time, guys. I appreciate it. And thank you for the years of support, by the way. I've always wanted to reach out and tell you guys that. You guys have always been supremely kind to us over there. So just wanted to say thank you formally.
Well, I appreciate that. And the feeling is mutual. You guys are one of the staples of the scene. And I'm thankful for bands such as yourselves that are reliable and getting it done.
Yeah, just keep those checks coming in, and all the positive news and reviews will keep coming, you know?
we're still on the air, David.
Oh, sorry. Okay, we're going to cut it now.
I don't know what he's talking about.
All right, Mark, have a good one, bro.
All right, well, thank you so much, guys. Take care.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.